It has been a while since I've had the privilege of speaking here with everyone. I'm trying to remember the last time I was speaking in. Damn, it works. Excellent. Remember the last time I was here? I'm stepping up here a little bit because I want to get a bit out of the, so I can actually see people, because this is great. I was telling Vicky this morning that it's been a while. I was, my wife and I were part of Grand Valley back when it was meeting at the university. Gives you an idea of how old I am. And it was a good time, as in some of you were there before, fans Monroe. Good to meet you guys again. And that. So I'm gonna talk this morning. I'm gonna start by talking a bit about Youth for Christ and some of the stuff we get to do there. I'm gonna switch into a bit of a teaching, some scripture. I'll say this about when I'm speaking. I'm actually really quite comfortable with interruptions. I've been doing youth work for a lot of years, and I was telling Vicky before, when we used to do the gathering, we used to have, those of you who might remember that, it's a large youth worship night that we did, citywide youth worship night. And so the room is packed with young people, and it's a full mix, and you've got young people who are growing up in the church, and they know how to behave. And there's a whole group of young people who have no idea. They just came through a drop-in center and other ministries, who have no idea how to behave. And the music's going, and it's fun, and everybody's having a great time. And then the youth pastor gets up to speak, and we're very specific. They shouldn't speak very long. They should be, you know, specific and engaging. Because our drop-in youth were wonderfully honest. They sat in the front row, and if you were boring, they just started talking to each other because they don't care. So all of a sudden, the speaker's going on, and then right here, right in front of them, these people just start turning to each other. And you know, if it's been a while and they haven't had a smoke, yeah, they're going to get up and go for a smoke, and then they're going to come back in, they're going to start talking to their friends, and right? So if you're going to speak in that environment, you better be ready for it. And I loved it. It's so honest. So you got to go to the bathroom, get up and leave. If you have a question, put up your hand or just yell at me and interrupt, because I will be totally honest with you and transparent that when I talk, two things happen. One, I tend to get fast because I don't know, I just do. And the other piece is sometimes things are much clearer in my head than when they come out of my mouth. So I am not at all offended by somebody saying, I have no idea what you just said. And I'll try and clarify. I might be able to do it. So with Youth for Christ, as Nikki pointed out, so I'm the executive director there right now. I get to lead her and the rest of our staff. We've been... You, as a congregation, have been very supportive of Youth for Christ for a lot of years. I was checking on your webpage. You even got the U-Turn logo on there, which is fantastic. It's not often, actually, that I go to a church website before I come to speak. So I was just reading through there, and I was thinking through, like, for Jen and Nikki especially. You guys have cared for them, and you've been their support community, and it's been, I want to say thanks. I want to say thanks on behalf of Youth for Christ for sending them and caring for them as they serve with us. You guys have been a big part of that in our community. U-Turn has a new director. Just some updates for you guys on that. U-Turn has a new director. Her name is Rena Booth-Nabid, which is great. Sean was the director, and he moved on to another program I'll tell you about in a bit. And so Rena took over that, but for the last year and a half, Nikki and Jen and the rest of the team have kind of been working together to lead themselves in a way, and have done a great job. But what has happened is we just reduced our capacity to serve youth. We just served fewer youth because Nikki had to do some admin and Jen had to do some admin, and everybody had to kind of pick up different roles. Bring in Rena in there now, it increases our capacity, and it is fun to listen to the team talk about the young people that they're looking forward to bringing in as we start to serve more and more. Right now, our ministries are full, our apartments are full, and we have Housing First is part of U-Turn. What Housing First does, I'm sure Nikki has told you lots about this already, but what Housing First does is it works with young people who are homeless, but it's not in, they live not in one of our apartments, but they live in a community apartment with regular landlords, and so we can expand as much as we have apartments and to expand to, and as much as our staff have the capacity to serve these youth, and it's been with Rena coming in, it's freed up our team to start taking on more youth, and we're starting to, because we have this, like I said, we have this waiting list. We have young people come in, they sit in our office, they talk to our receptionist, and they're waiting for opportunities to get into the ministries because we've just been packed up. And we've seen a lot of increase in homelessness in our community. There's lots of reasons for that. But for us, it's been just sad. In some ways it's sad. We see more faces, people that we don't know yet. And they come to us looking for homes. They're looking for support. They're looking for a community. And we're able to do some of that. In fact, one of the things that's been, I'm anticipating this coming week, is we're interviewing one of our former U-Turn youth to come and serve on our staff. Which is, I mean, for me, that's an exciting thing, because I knew her when she was living in the, this would have been, 12, 14 years ago, she was living in U-Turn, and she had come through a foster system and so forth, and she was living with one of our house parents. This is back when we were doing U-Turn 1, and we had a house, and we had volunteers who lived in the house, and then we had these young people under the age of 17 who were also living in the house, and we were doing this transitional housing with them. And anyway, this girl was living there. She was part of our U-Turn ministry. She's been with us for a lot of years, in and out, long life story that hopefully you get a chance to hear sometime. But for me, what the exciting piece is, she's coming. She's at a place in her life where she now wants to join our staff and to be part of our team in giving back and serving others. She's kind of come this whole circle, and life's not perfect for her in any way, but we are just excited that she's at that place, and that we're at a place where we can invite her in to serve with us. I often get the question when I'm meeting with people, they say, so what's new? Which, to be honest, usually gives me a lot of anxiety. I go into idiot shock usually, and to be honest, the last time somebody asked me that, I just sat there and I stared at him for a minute, and I says, oh, I'm sorry, man, I hate that question. I hate that question because part of it is I don't have a ready answer, and I get asked the question all the time, so I should have a ready answer, but I just don't have it. But I'm going to tell you this morning because I thought it through. What is new? What is new is for the last year and a bit, a couple years in our part, but it's been open in Brandon for years, we've been working on this ministry called Huddle. Huddle is a little bit unique for us. It is designed to be working with young people, all young people, and it's focused around mental health. So it's a little bit more upstream, if you know that term, than our, say, our Common Spaces, which is our recovery program. Housing and ministry, and U-Turn, which is for homeless ministry. Huddle is a little bit more upstream in that we're working with young people who are struggling a little bit with mental health, or they might be possibly getting into addictions, but they're not quite there yet. And so it's this kind of community space that we've developed where we have counselors who do individual counseling there. We have Prairie Mountain Health supplies clinical support there. We work with a lot of different agencies who kind of all work in this space. And for me, what's really exciting about this space is we are creating a public space, which is not not exclusively Christian. So a lot of the people who work there are Christian. Our staff are. Some of the other people who work there are Christian. But not everybody is. And so we get this great sort of collision of space, and there's always the pressure to create this exclusive space, and we're pushing back against that, and we're creating this public space where we believe Jesus can best minister to young people in their mental health needs when it's not just Christians. Anyway, so it's Huddle is what's new, and one of the what we're talking about hiring. One of the we have a youth council with Huddle, and the youth council kind of brings together. Time is flying so fast. Huddle kind of brings together the youth council. We filter things through them, so they are part of basically they are our voice. They are the group that kind of gets together and says, these are the needs that young people have in our community, or we have an idea for a new program. We run it past the youth council, and they kind of filter it through, and they talk it up, and they just give us this youth perspective. They're all young. They're all kind of in this lived experience. They've had experience with mental health or addictions or whatever, so they take all of our ideas. that we as good adults have and say, wow, that'd be great. We should do this with young people. And they go, oh, that's a dumb idea. Here's why. Or, oh, that's a great idea. And here's why. Or maybe we should modify it. And so they're part of this. Anyway, the girl who's coming to lead it now, we're having a bit of a transition. So our new leader there is a young woman who started in our literacy ministry when she was in grade 4. And we've been part of her life and all the way through that ministry and then through graduating high school and now in university. And we've been part of her life and praying with her and caring for her with her grandmom now. And so it's just exciting to see young people who have started and been served by at some point in our ministry. And as they grow and we've been able to be part of it, now they are coming to places where they are now starting to join beside us to impact other people. And Huddle is kind of what got me up here and kind of got me into this, because I had this working with this public space, and how do we become Christians in this public space? What does it mean to be Christ in this public space? I threw a quote onto back into Soren Kierkegaard, and I threw his quote onto my email, and Nikki read it and said, hey, why don't you teach on that? And before I thought much about it, I said, sure. And then all of a sudden, I was starting to plan. I'm going, how do I teach from Kierkegaard without getting all geeky and philosophy thing and whatever? And you can throw the quote up. It's, yes, that is my title. There it is. That's the quote. Loving my neighbor as a Christian means loving someone for who they are rather than who I want them to be. Loving people as a Christian, who they are rather than who I want them to be. Next slide. I'm going to be running through a number of scriptures this morning and give you a chance to kind of see them there. Once I get going, we're just going to go. And I'm going to reference scripture, but I won't necessarily go deep into each one. We're going to take a passage out of Leviticus. It's repeated in Matthew 22. Matthew 7 is a little different. Galatians and Romans 14. Those are the big texts we'll be touching on this morning in the next 15 minutes or so. My word. So how do you love someone for who they are and not who you want them to be? Sit with that for a minute. How do we actually do that? It's a great idea. It's a wonderful quote. It fits on the end of an email. But how do you actually do that? Well, it's the steps. Well, I'm going to start with this. I'm going to read a scripture right off on that. In Leviticus 19, it says, do not harbor hatred against your brother. Rebuke your neighbor, and you will not incur guilt because of him. Do not take revenge or bear a grudge against members of your community, but love your neighbor as yourself, because I am the Lord. So Jesus takes that quote. That's the Leviticus quote given to Moses when they're heading into the land of the promised land, and they are going from being a group of tribes who were once slaves, and now they're going to become a nation. This is interesting in that this is God telling them how to create laws for their nation. So understand from it that God is telling them the law of your land needs to be this. This is the law. The law is love your neighbor as yourself. So Jesus picks that up as he's starting in his new creation. He's starting into his new covenant where he is creating a new people, a new law, and a new land, so to speak. And he's saying, and he takes that passage and says it again. There's a bunch of legal scholars and lawyers had come to him and asked him the question. They said, they were asking Jesus to try and trap him. They ask him, they say, what are the greatest commandments, right? Let's see if we can test this guy. What's the greatest commandments? And Jesus says, he said to them, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the greatest and most important command. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets depend on these two commands. And if you know all the law and the prophets, that's a big chunk of the scripture. So you can save yourself a lot of reading if you're wondering what God says in that whole massive section of the Old Testament. This is what he says. Love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself. A little further on, before this, in another way, Jesus says this to his people in Matthew 7. He says, therefore, whatever you want others to do for you, do also the same for them, for this is the law and the prophets. That's sometimes called the golden rule. Phrased this way, it's not just Christian. There are other faiths, other peoples throughout history have had something similar. The idea that do unto others as you would have them do to you. So how do we do it? I want to suggest that there's two ways that we can handle this problem of how do we actually love someone for who they are and not who we want them to be. First, I want to suggest that we remove prejudices from our review. So what I mean by that is this. So humans are, we, all of us, are meaning-making machines. That's a quote by somebody much smarter than myself, but it's a great quote. Humans make meaning. We are always looking for ways to make meanings. We tell ourselves stories that make sense of things. So most often our stories aren't conscious, they're just something that we do. So we collect our past experiences, things we've heard, things we've read, things we're not even conscious of, and we roll all of this together in our heads, and then we create this narrative that explains our current experience. And as we take this narrative, we attach feelings to this narrative, and that gives it sort of strength. The strength of conviction, the strength of certainty, the strength of... So when Jesus is walking along and he sees a blind man, his disciples say to him, so who sinned? This man or his parents? So they're operating on a narrative. They have this thing going on in their head. In their head, they see somebody blind and they put the story, this meaning behind it. And the story they tell themselves is that somebody has sinned and that's why this person's blind. And Jesus says, no, what are you talking about? It's got nothing to do with sin. He says, no, this man is blind because the Father, so that God may be glorified. And he takes their narrative, and their story is that if you're blind, somebody sinned. And Jesus gives him an alternative. No, maybe this person's, Jesus says, this person's blind because of God's glory. So you give God glory. So now they have a choice. The next time they see somebody who's blind, they now have a story. They have two stories now. They have a choice. Now they can say, they can tell themselves that this person's blind because somebody sinned. Or they can say this person's blind because of God's glory, because this is an opportunity to bring God glory. One night I was walking my dog. I have this standard poodle, because if you have to bend down to pet your dog, it's not really a dog. And I have to walk it, right? Okay, so I'm going to take care of it. It's my dog. I'm going to take care of it, so I don't want a little dog. So we have a standard poodle. He's about this tall. It's great. He's black, and he barks, but he's a nice dog. So I'm walking down the street. I'm in town here, and I'm right close to Wendy's out in that area there. It's night. I'm walking along, and I'm in the middle of the block, and across the street, three guys come straight across the street directly at me. And so it's a little bit odd. We're in the middle of the right. There's no driveways or streets or anything. They're coming right at me in the middle. And so I don't know them. There are many stories that can go onto my head about what's going to happen in this moment. Part of me says, well, this could get really nasty, and I better hold my dog close because things are going to go sideways. And I want him to bark at them. It's really what I want to happen. And if he has to bite them, I want him to do that. Because this could go bad, right? That's the story I'm telling myself. And I'm trying not to. I'm trying to find some other reason, but I can't find another reason. Just as the guy gets close to me, he's almost equal to me. He whips out his hand, points at me. And I'm like, okay, right? This is freaking me out a little bit, because all of a sudden his hand comes out of his pocket and it's like, whick. I'm like, what the heck? What has he got in his hand? What's it? Like, all these things are going on in my head. And he goes, nice dog. And keeps walking. That was the whole encounter. But the amount of anxiety and stuff that went on in the head because of the stories I was telling myself was significant. My body was braced for it. I was all ready to have an encounter that was going to be unfriendly. And it wasn't. He just liked my dog. When I was growing up, we had I grew up on a chicken farm, and so we would every once in a while we'd have to haul chickens. That's just kind of the way it is. You clean out the barn, you bring in new people or new chickens. You bring in new chickens. So we did that, and I grew up doing that quite regularly. So when I was small, we used to hire one of our neighbors to come and help, and his name was Tim. He was an indigenous guy. And he was great. Made me laugh a lot and worked hard and made my life easier because he worked hard, and it was great. One time we were short on staff for we had a bigger job, and so Tim brought a couple of his cousins. His cousins were allergic to work. They were awful. They really were. And so growing up from that experience, I have this choice in my head because I didn't know a lot of indigenous people back then. I went to school with one, and there was Glenn, and he and I got along fine, but I didn't know a lot of indigenous people then. And so now I have these stories in my head. So when I see somebody or I meet somebody who's indigenous, I have at least two stories. I have this Tim story, and I can look at somebody and I can make a lot of assumptions that they're just really fun people to be with who work really hard, and I just like to hang out with them. Or they're like Tim's cousins, and I can look at somebody and say, you are lazy bums. Why are you here? Whatever, you just live paycheck to paycheck, or so whatever story I'm making up in my head based on Tim's cousins. But I have two stories, and I can choose which one I'm going to tell myself. And the more often I tell myself the Tim story, the more often I am predisposed to being welcoming, open, and inviting, expectant of the people I meet. And the more often I tell myself Tim's cousin's story, the more I see somebody new who looks indigenous and I become closed to them because I'm thinking Tim's cousin's story as opposed to Tim. And those are choices I make, right? Those are the stories that I tell myself. So when it's because my feelings will follow whatever story that I'm rehearsing in my head. So when I come into a new situation, I'm going to make meaning of that situation by telling myself a story, and I'm going to choose which one. Love your neighbor as yourself is both helpful and challenging because it places us in the center of the equation because it says as yourself. So in one way, this makes it very personal and crosses cultural and language barriers, right? Because I know how I am and I know how I feel. And if I'm going to love somebody like I love myself, then it doesn't matter what language you speak. I can go to any country, any culture, anything, and I immediately have a frame of reference. I can love you like I love myself. I don't even know you, but I can love you like I know myself because I know myself. And if I love myself, then therefore I can transfer that to you. So that's a very cool part of it. The challenging part of it is, what if you're not like me? What if I don't have the same experiences? What if you don't look like me? What if you don't talk like me? What if you have a life full of trauma, which I didn't have? Now what? How do I love you when we just are not the same? How do I love you as you would have me as in a way that you translates to you as love when I don't know you? When I go to park a car, I always park at the furthest edge of the parking lot because two reasons. One, there's less stress because there's always parking spots so I can just drive in. And two, it's just healthier to walk, so I don't mind walking, right? There are other people in my family who really want me to drive around and find something really close to the door. For them, it is not loving to walk from the other end of the parking lot. I am punishing them. For me, it's loving. For them, it's punishment. If I love them as I love myself, in the sense that I do the same things, then they are going to interpret that as punishment. So what is God saying? Love them as you love yourself means that I have to love them as they want me to love them. So this is a problem with the idea that put yourself in somebody else's shoes, right? I can't put myself in their shoes because I can't actually feel how they feel because I'm not them. And I've got this timer going here and I'm throwing myself all off. So I'm going to skip that piece. But I just want to say this. So that is the challenge with loving somebody who is different, is we have to distance ourselves from the idea of us being the center of the story. We have to decenter ourselves from the story and put them into the middle and to see them. The other thing I want to suggest is this. So how do we do that? So yeah, that's a good thing for me to say. It's fine for me to say it, but how do you actually do that? I want to say this by this. It's by having presence and building relationship. And I will, again, tell you that Nikki and Jen are great at this. But just being present and getting to know somebody. Because when you get to know somebody, then it's easier to show them love because you know what it means for them to be loving. I can care for my family by parking close to the door for them when we're in a parking lot because I know them and I know their preference. And I know what feels to them like love because we've known each other. So we get past some of these challenges by just knowing. I've also found it, again, like I said, it's helpful to tell myself alternative stories as to why someone has done something. Instead of grabbing onto the most negative or the one that I want to grab onto first, I make myself pause and stop, and I tell myself other stories, other reasons. Maybe there's trauma in their life. Maybe things, it's a bad day at home. They cut me off on the road because, you know, maybe they're having a bad day or they're hurrying to the hospital because their wife's having a child. It doesn't matter. I can pick some other alternative story, and that just makes it a little easier for me to love them and to care about somebody rather than have this negative go off in my head and to fixate on some sort of one single negative story and to believe that that is absolutely true. So my other thing I want to say is this, the other thing that is important is how are we able to relieve ourselves of the burden to change or to fix others? So how do we love someone for who they are and not who we want them to be? Part two is, how are we able to relieve ourselves of the burden to change or fix people? I think the challenge is for us is that we feel the need to fix people. And look, Jesus does tell us to go into all the world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe everything I have commanded you. And remember, I will be with you always, even to the end of age. So it does kind of sound like Jesus is telling us to go and change people, right? It does sort of say, go out there, make disciples, baptize them. It does sound. But I want to suggest this. Well, I guess just to emphasize that too, we do have to understand that the Christian faith is a prophetic faith, right? It's about change. We change our lives. We act differently. We seek justice and reconciliation and all that sort of stuff. We don't believe in, the Christian faith isn't one that can just exist in your head or in some sort of immaterial universe. The Christian faith is very alive here and now. We're called to be reconciled of all creation, right? So how do we do this when it's not up to us to fix people? So let me ask you the question. When you think about your life, has anybody ever fixed you? Has anybody ever fixed you? Have you ever been in a situation where you're just broken or whatever it is and somebody fixed you? Did somebody ever make you change? And, okay, put it this way. Did somebody ever make you change and have it stick? Because we can always make each other change for a reason, you know, you can hold finances, or you can be a parent, you can make a child change. But does it stick? We that's not a role that we can play. I know in my life certainly it hasn't worked. I can't think of anything where somebody has made me and I've done it. In fact, I'm resistant. Okay, I'm one of those people that you tell me to go left and my first feeling is I should probably go right. I just am. Somebody says, that's impossible. I go, oh yeah, I'll show you how to do it then. I always have been. It's just, I don't know, sin or whatever it is. I don't know. But I can't think of how can, I think Jesus takes away my sin and Jesus and the Spirit help me to change. And my community of people around me, I want to be like them and change happens, but it's a lot more complex than somebody taking on the responsibility to change me. That's too great a responsibility, and it's not possible. We had a young man in our pre-employment ministry So he had been involved in gangs, and he was kind of a low-level drug dealer, and he had kind of wrapped his whole life around his whole selling and dealing and, you know, hanging with the guys and doing all the things that gangs do, and it's mostly illegal. And you know, he kind of knew that it wasn't the life he really wanted, but, you know, to change was a big cost, right? If he's going to change, he's going to change his sleeping habits. He's not going to sleep all night. He's going to get up. If he's going to change, then he's going to lose some friends because, well, now he's going to work during the day and they sleep during the day, and he's going to sleep at night and they don't sleep at night. Things are all going to change for him, and it was just too big a cost. He couldn't make it. And then he had a kid. And all of a sudden he said, I don't want my kid to have a drug dealer for a dad. I don't want my kid to see me all strung out all day lying around the couch and whatever. I don't want my kid to hang out with, to grow up with these people, talking about his friends. So he decided to go into pre-employment. He wanted to make a change. He wanted to get a job. Having this child became his motivation to do the change. So we met together, we prayed together, we spent time with him, we spent hours and days trying to help him to craft this new life, to make these new changes, to reinforce all the positive things he was doing. We hooked him up with other young parents, with other people who had day jobs. We talked about forgiveness and past and how do you leave your past behind you, and because that's a big burden to carry along with you when you're trying to make all these changes. And we worked and worked and worked to make success as possible as it could be, but we couldn't fix him. It's still his responsibility to do that kind of work. Our work was to love him even when he decided that was all too hard. We were disappointed. And we respected him enough to tell him that we were disappointed while we were sharing a coffee. We tried to hold on to the relationship. We tried to continue to show love and be open while at the same time being disappointed that he was making choices to go back into a life that we knew he didn't want and we didn't want it for him either. I'll close with this. There's this great passage in Romans that's always struck me. Romans 14, verse 4, where it says, who are you to pass judgment on another servant? Before his own master, he stands and falls. And he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. So picture this with me for a moment. So Paul is writing to the people in Rome, and he's saying to them, look, you follow Jesus. And Jesus is giving you instructions. And this is what it means for you to live that path and to walk that path following him. And I'm following Jesus. And sometimes my actions are going to be different than your actions. And how do you judge my actions if we're both following Jesus, but it looks a little different sometimes? Because I'm a servant and you're a servant. And we're both listening to the same master. And it was a great reminder to me. It's that there's that quote that says, I know God and you're not him. And that phrase goes through my head whenever I'm sitting down with a youth or a peer or somebody else, and I think, and I wanna pass judgment on what they should be doing. And I know God and you're not him. And so I pray. Because I do have expectations. I do have expectations that life can change. So I pray and I bring them before God and I increase and I beg God to bring about change in people's lives. Because he is the one who fixes and changes. And by being relieved of that responsibility, by being relieved of the responsibility to fix and to change somebody else, I'm able to love somebody as they need to be loved. Not how I want them to be, but how they are. So I've changed my phrasing a little bit. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbor for who they are, not who you wish they were. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and your neighbor for who they are, not who you wish they were. 35 minutes. Vicky, 35 minutes. Listen, I am open. If you have any questions, thoughts, if you want to know more about YFC, I haven't told a ton of stories and stuff this morning. In part, that's intentional. Jen and Nikki are way better storytellers than I am. I will tell you stories about sitting with people and whatever, but they will tell you the heartbreak or the wonder and the joy and whatever of actually sitting with youth, and they do way more youth work than I do. I help care for them, but they can tell you better stories. If you have any other questions or anything about YFC or about, you know, something that I may have said that tweaks in your mind, you go, that didn't quite make sense. How can you help me with that? Just let me know. Thanks, Vicky.
Thank you, Dwayne. As I close, I'm going to, I don't know if you guys recognize this book. I have read it before. It's a book of blessings by Kate Bowler. And I found one that I thought might suit after we heard from Dwayne and just heard about loving people and how do we love as a Christian. And that is something that we are going to be exploring, I think, for the next couple of months. Just what does it mean to love people as a Christian? And I find sometimes here in church, I think we get challenged, definitely, about how do we love another, one another, and standards. But sometimes in church, I mean, you see people for an hour once a week, and then you can kind of choose if you're not going to, you know, you just put up with it a little bit. But there are not just YFC, but there are Christian organizations in our city that are learning how to, that are learning and are walking with people. And they are walking with people that they're having to learn how to love, how to show love to people that may not be operating in the ideal of what we would think someone should act like. Like Dwayne talked about, when they used to have the gathering, that youth worship night, and the kids would come and they would just act how they wanted to act. And in church, we kind of get used to, oh, well, people come here, they should act a certain way. Or in life, people should act a certain way. And I have heard stories from Nikki and Jen about the challenge that it is sometimes to be walking alongside people and just loving them when their lives have generally been much more complicated than my life, at least, than a lot of our lives. And yet they need love. They need God. So as I close, I wanted to read 2 Corinthians verses chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, and it says this: "Praise be to the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God." And I believe that organizations like YFC and the many, many programs that they have here in Westman, whether the program is something that is explicitly Christian, or it's a program like Huddle, where you're trying to figure out how to make a public space, the people who are there, whether it's volunteers or people who are working at YFC, they have this comfort that they have received from God, and they are wanting to offer it to others. So as I close, I wanted to say a blessing for those who are working with the vulnerable, but us who also want to support in the way, any way that we can. And so I will say this. Oh Lord, you see the vulnerable who face what we find hard to imagine, and you see their caregivers and helpers of every kind who string together scarce resources while they are running on empty, because sometimes they are. Lord, we want to bless them, and we pray that you would also bless us as we live in our relative ease, but we are still jars of clay. We ourselves are broken, but we want to give to others what we can give. We want to pray. We want to pray boldly. We want to love fiercely. We want the ground of our being to be your love for us and your love working through us. Lord, thank you for those who are caring for the needs of those in our community. I pray that you would teach us how we may do that as well. And I would like to encourage all of you this morning that if you would like to give and support the work of Youth for Christ, you can give through an e-transfer, or we do have our debit machine in the back, or we have the one donation box. And you can either just write YFC in the memo line if you're giving an e-transfer, or write it on the receipt or the envelope of what you're giving. And I hope that this has been encouraging to you in how we can love, but I hope that we can also encourage those in our church and those just in our community who are learning to do that hard, loving people where they are at and not putting lots of expectation on them. All right. Thank you. Have a good week.